seas the mighty Salome.
Welcome back to Mages and Murder Dads, the only show dedicated to the Baldur's Gate franchise, and then beyond, and then also the Baldur's Gate franchise. I'm Cameron, and I play Ticklevar the Sorcerer.
I'm Danny, and I play Balthazar, the slightly stealthy barbarian.
What?
Yeah.
No, you don't.
I do.
You don't.
I do now.
You're Balthazar the Barbarian.
I've taken some multi-class levels and
people
rogue
are gonna be
now.
So pissed off.
they wanted solid down the line.
They want barbarian. 12 and barbarian.
They want 12 and barbarian. Well, I'm sorry, barbarian's front loaded. you get 90% of barbarian at level 2. that's kind of what the class is doing. I really just went into 5 for the extra attack. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Oh God. All right, well, give us your lies. Give us your misrepresentations and your whodunits.
Yeah, so towards the very end of Act 1 and towards the very beginning of Act 2, Balthazar, after having, you know, snagged 5 levels in Barbarian for the extra attack, he's a Berserker Barbarian. Now, Balthazar is picking up some levels in Rogue. And the reason why
we ever done this thing?
Okay.
Berserker.
Is that a thing?
Balthazar likes to fight dudes berserker.
Is this a SNL bit?
No. It's something way better.
Okay.
And the
okay.
fact that you don't know it says more about you. Everyone, you know what? Clap in the chat. You know what I mean? Give us the comment. Give us a little clap emoji. Or just type clap, clap, clap. Hit the thumbs up button. Hit that subscribe. Hit all the positive things if you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. All right. Go back to your goofery or whatever you're talking about.
Hold on. I'm Googling. Berserker joke.
Nope. You'll never get it. This is for indoor kids only. We're an elite group.
A lot of people on some gaming forums, they're talking about like feats that have the word berserker in it. They say in parentheses joke, like it's a bad, it's a bad like build.
This is really bad, huh?
This is really my Google algorithm's telling on me here, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. It's like, would you like to read a forum post from 1997?
Yes. Okay.
And you're like, yeah, I would.
I would. But yeah, if I get 3 levels in Rogue, I get a Rogue subclass, and one of the Rogue subclasses is Thief that gives you an extra bonus action, and I, due to my Berserker subclass of Barbarian, can convert bonus actions into attacks.
So you're getting a freebie.
I'm getting a little freebie, yeah. So level 5 Barbarian, I've got 1 action, which is 2 throws. And I've got 2 bonus actions, which are 2 throws.
Mm-hmm.
So every round, I get to throw my returning pike +1 4 times. And that is without the use of like a haste potion that would add another 2 throws.
That's a lot of throws.
Yeah, I'm really throwing.
I think that's too many throws.
Nah.
Have they let a game designer get their hands on this thing?
Well, that's the thing. Here's what's wild. This is kind of like all of the stuff that you hear, you know, or that you read about online in terms of BG3
that
optimization.
I hear about when I'm like around the water cooler.
Yeah, at work.
And they're like, hey, did you hear about the ability to multi-class into 3 levels of Thief? Oh my gosh. Wow. But yeah, what about it?
Yeah, they're all, it's all like, there's a reference point in 5e somewhere of like a variant of that build. So, yeah, there are maybe a couple of Larian implementations that are like, oh, wow, well, that's a completely new thing. Like, but generally speaking, there's kind of like some kind of version that exists in the tabletop world.
Now, has Balthazar been able to resurrect an undead adamantium clawed badger yet?
No.
That can tunnel through a wall at 60 feet per round? Has that happened yet? Is that in the game yet?
Okay. Unfortunately not. So
we've kept the power level at the appropriate amount.
Yeah. The tabletop is still a safe place for that kind of chicanery, as it were. Mm-hmm.
You went with shenanigan and then you backed out of it.
Yeah, because I think that chicanery is a bit more accurate for what we're talking about.
All right. Very good.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Deep cut. That's for three people.
We've talked about that on the, you can go to patreon.com/rangetouch to get the Range Touch monthly, where we just talk about random stuff for like an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've talked about that on that show before.
Okay. Yeah. Good. 16 people.
Yeah. No, I think a lot of people listen to that. I actually, let's just talk about the other Range Touch properties in the middle of this show. I did a little poll where I was like, hey, if you listen to this, like, react to this post or whatever. And, like, a lot of people listen to it.
Oh.
And I made a joke at some point, like, I was like, you get it for free. You're not subscribing for this. And some people said, I subscribe only for this.
Wow.
Yeah. So there you go. People like it. Patreon.com/rangetouch. If you're not already on board, if you like this show, throw us a couple dollars. Buy us a cup of coffee a month. It helps out a lot. Keeps the whole thing going. When I'm sitting here patiently editing Balthazar's goofballery.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, what are we up to? So you got the thief. So now you're good. Wait, how do you have? Give me your full run here. What are all your levels and whatnot?
First five levels in Barbarian. Level one gets you Rage. Level two gets you Reckless Attack. Level three gets you a subclass, which is Berserker. Mm-hmm. That gives you the bonus action throw with no penalty,
yep.
Which is wild. Four, who cares? Five is the extra attack. That's the whole reason why you definitely don't want to multi-class as kind of like a quote-unquote pure martial class before five. You're delaying your extra attack. After extra attack at five, then you go into rogue. Mm-hmm. You want to get rogue until you're level three. Once you're level three, you're probably going to take one more level of rogue just to get the ability score increase / feat.
But now, wouldn't you like one more? It's like the end of Monty Python in the Meaning of Life.
Yeah, exactly.
Wouldn't you like to have one more level of rogue?
And the final arc, I'll go ahead and spoil it. It's just going to be taking a couple levels in fighter to get to increase your critical hit range via the champion subclass of fighter, and also getting action surge. So once every short rest, you get basically a free attack.
Cool.
Yeah, and I think that optimally, you actually, like, when you're level 12, you respec to get to do the levels in fighter first and, like, switch them. But who cares? There is a way to play this game where every time you level, you respec, because at every level, with every build in tabletop, that build has a peak of, like, when it is strongest. And with Baldur's Gate 3, you can respec your character to basically make yourself the strongest possible, whatever your level is. Mm-hmm. So, but I imagine that is something you rarely do. Although you did mention respecking. Is this a major turning point here at the beginning of Act 2? You respecking? Yeah, is Tickelvar now a wizard?
No. None of that happens yet.
Okay.
Tickelvar's a sorcerer, canonically.
Mm-hmm.
I'm unwilling to break with tradition.
You're not even taking the one wizard dip so you can scribe spells.
No, because I don't care. My spells come from blood, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Who you're gonna fight with the weave on this one? You're gonna fight with the very fabric of magic being in your. Do people have DNA in the Forgotten Realms? What do they have?
That's a good question.
It is a good question, right? It doesn't have to be
what
we think it is. You know what I mean?
No. If the weave exists, there can be a different way that, like, her, inheriting traits works.
Yeah. I think it's like little witches and warlocks down there doing battle all the time.
It's like homunculi, and you're in on a microscopic level, like little blood homunculi.
That's actually what the blood war is. We just zoom in into like one dragon's bloodstream.
inside
and
every
he's like
person
fighting the common cold.
Yeah, inside every person there's a demon mm-hmm. and there's a devil.
Yeah.
Which one wins? The one with the most blood.
You hope the devil. Yeah, you want really order. Do. You want pure lawful order in there. You don't want any chaos in your blood.
No.
But that's the thing. Sorcerers, chaotic blood. Yeah, but no, I don't dip. I do at the end of this act, which I alluded to, I believe, in the last episode. At the end of this act, I do some respecking.
So, okay.
But it will require me to spoil parts of the act.
Well, yeah, let's just that, so let's put a pin in it.
You went to the Inner Last Light, did a bunch of chaos.
Mm-hmm.
Did a bunch of things at the behest of your butler.
Now those were shenanigans.
Right. What's his name again?
Scalaritus Fell.
Does he talk like that?
Kinda, yeah.
I haven't edited any of the episodes yet where he showed up, so I can't.
Oh, that's
fun. I
haven't
seen. Yeah.
You're going to enjoy him.
Yeah. I mean, I have seen his hat. Yeah. I'll tell you that. That's a little hint for you for coming in 6 months of episodes. I know where his hat is. Yeah, so you went and did that and then presumably went to Moonrise Tower, question mark?
Yeah, actually, in the actual order of my footage.
Voice goes up because question mark?
Yeah, voice goes, oh,
mm-hmm.
to Moonrise. I went to Moonrise first, actually.
Oh, got you. So you're with the Drider. You go all the way to Moonrise.
That's right.
Got it.
And you go to Moonrise. You don't need a lantern for protection for your little trip down to Moonrise because you're fairy blessed.
Got fairy magic.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like kind of pissed off about helping me, you know, because they're scamps.
Sure.
Like ontologically.
They don't like being told what to do either.
They don't, but they're too small and weak to affect real change.
Mm-hmm.
That's
Balthazar's
why you have to,
just a big fairy.
You know, that's actually the deal. That's what people don't talk about.
Is no.
That he was a like a changeling at birth. He was stolen from his half-orc home and sequestered. Whoa, hold on a minute.
Mm-hmm.
That's
sequestered
a gag,
where?
Sequestered in Candlekeep, raised by people who were not his family,
mm-hmm.
and then unleashed upon the world to do major changes and ultimately dispel illusions. That's what happened in Baldur's Gate 1, if you remember.
That's true.
We dispelled some illusions.
Mm-hmm. Dismantled conspiracies.
That's right. That is what fairies do. Damn. Balthazar is a big fairy.
Yeah.
Big fae folk Balthazar.
And you know, I think that the fae folk of Forgotten Realms, they look up to him. Because after Balthazar's finished, I think they're going to have a lot more room to maneuver in the world. You know?
Yeah, really the issue is that, you know, because they're small and winged, an individual fairy has like a roaming, you know, regular roaming distance of like 500 miles square.
Mm-hmm.
And or for our, you know, imperial or non-imperial, our metric listeners, 500 kilometers square. They are equivalent.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, but before humans came around, they had a lot of room. Before humans and other PC races, right, player races, before mm-hmm. they appeared on the world, they had a lot to do. And now they don't have as much room. But Balthazar is maybe going to help fix that. He's actually champion of the Fae Folk, Balthazar.
Yeah.
He's from the Shadowfell.
I love it. I'm glad
it's good.
I'm glad we figured this out.
Someone hit us with the fan art. Balthazar in, you know what I mean, amongst fairies in a kind of pseudo-Renaissance style. It'll be good.
Oh, I like that.
No. Like an English late Romanticism style, right? He's got diaphanous blood flying everywhere. Because he's bald.
You're elevating it. I was just thinking Balthazar held aloft by tiny, like, tooth fairy wings.
That's good,
like,
too.
Yeah.
Hit us with that one. But what'd you get up to in Moonrise Tower?
So, Moonrise Tower's cool. Act 2 begins, the second you meet any merchant, Act 2 begins, like, just absolutely drenching you with magical items. Just that, like, this is really where... I think that the game's generosity goes into overdrive with respect to itemization. We talked last episode about, you know, the struggles of the Baldur's Gate 1 player with their panoply of options between mundane longsword, mundane shortsword.
Yeah.
Mundane mace. Well, everything is...
wandering through the wilderness. Uh-oh, a lady's come to kiss me. I'm dead. Game over.
Yeah.
Yep, that kind of thing.
But, yeah, the stuff here is really cool. For the most part, nothing big on itemization that Balthazar needs, but I imagine for a party, you know, a traditional party that you're rolling with, there's probably plenty of stuff that you could have picked up here.
Are you negging me here? Traditional party?
You are very... I mean, you're a traditional party, but with the, like, a very offensive party because you don't have a rogue right now, right? You've got barbarian, fighter... a cleric, blaster, you know, sorcerer.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
If you subbed personal,
yeah, if you subbed the barbarian for a rogue, that would be like the traditional ass fantasy party.
Yeah, probably. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, not originally. Yeah, I remember the thief was invented later. It is
that's
not
true.
Canonical.
No, well, that's the reason why in EverQuest we talked about the Holy Trinity, and the thief was not a part of the Holy Trinity.
Because they're cursed by God.
Yeah.
They are held apart. Ao does not see the thief.
No.
Because they are hidden. It's part of their creation myth. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. So you're rocking that.
Yeah, so I, you know, I roll around and I look at the merchants. But ultimately, if you just pop through the big doors here, you get a cutscene. And this is the best villain introduction in the game. To my mind. Because you meet Kethrick.
Yeah. Best villain introduction in the game. I think there is one later. There's not that many villains, I guess. That's part of it.
It also depends on like how small are we getting with villain, right?
Yeah. I think there's one later in this act that's pretty good.
Okay.
Anyone, I'll just, you know, I'm not going to spoil it, like, about who it is, but I'll give you the setup, and people who have played the game will know, and people who don't will be like, well, how does that happen? Anyone who's introduced sitting on top of someone else, that's pretty good. That's like Joker shit, you know what I mean? I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. Well, what happens here?
So, yeah, we meet Kethrick, and a couple of names we need to know here. There's Kethrick Thorne. He's sitting, he's got sweet ass armor on. He's got super cool armor. His whole head is coming through a place in his plate mail that looks like it's jaws. So it's got like teeth, which is wild. He's got a cool like gemstone in the middle of his armor. And Kethrick Thorne's face looks familiar to me. So I had to Google it.
Kethrick like, Thorne's Kethrick's Thorn. That's his. That's the weapon that you should be able to get off of him.
Yes,
and it's like a big pike. He's a hammer wielder, unfortunately. But
yeah, unfortunately, and it is. It's that J.K. Simmons.
Hmm.
That's him. It's you and we
John,
all. Mm-hmm.
Killmeister Simmons.
Now, you might not know who this guy is, so let me...
No, I know who it is. He wants pictures of Spider-Man.
He wants pictures of Spider-Man. You're drumming for him, and he says, one more time.
I don't think that's how he said it.
Yeah, just, could you give that to me?
You know what? You're doing great.
You're doing great.
I really like what I'm hearing, but I would like to hear that one more time.
You know what? I'm liking that so much. I'd like to hear it again.
I'd like to hear it. One or two more times. We're gonna just sit here. I just want to hear those sweet, sweet beats. And we're gonna be here two or three more times. Mm-hmm. All right. Sounds great to me. I'm gonna get some cookies. I'm gonna get some juice. And we're all gonna have a good old time. I just wanna hear that wonderful music one more time.
Mm-hmm.
That was him.
That was him.
Yeah. I don't think he looks like J.K. Simmons at all.
Really?
No, not even a little bit.
Yeah, for me, this is visibly recognizable. A little bit more wrinkly. Hair's different.
Yeah.
You know.
Appears to be a cleric of some sort of evil god. That you know, that doesn't really happen in Burn After Reading.
No, it doesn't happen in Burn After Reading. And also, I right clicked him and he's undead.
Although he does play a harper in that movie, thinking
he
about it.
He does play a harper in that movie.
He does play a harper. So maybe that's part of the extended Baldur's Gate universe.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. But he's not a harper in this game. Notably, he is just some bad guy. As far
he's some bad guy. Yeah. So Kethric Thorne's there. Zrel is a half-orc woman who has like a robe on, some kind of caster. And she seems like the kind of like the big assistant, you know, the secretary slash right-hand woman of Kethric Thorne here in this throne room. And they are asking some goblins about how things went. Mm-hmm. And these are the goblins. I think I might recognize one from like a cutscene in the goblin area. Not 100% sure. It could just be that they kind of just made sure that I knew as a player, hey, these are the goblins from the Shattered Sanctuary, from the goblin camp.
Mm-hmm.
And so I walk in and I'm overhearing this this interrogation. They're kind of like holding court here, and the goblins are having to explain themselves.
Mm.
And what's really interesting is there are a couple of dialogue cues that can happen if you are Dark Urge, but I think I somehow miss them.
Huh.
But they can happen as Dark Urge, where Kethric Thorne like seems a little surprised that you're here. Kethric Thorne says, doesn't say like, oh, who are you? Kethric Thorne recognizes me.
Wait, so that this doesn't happen for you or it does happen for you?
So on one, so I think that this is the thing is like, I did have to like reload at some point because of this, because there was actually like, I didn't crash too many times in this game, but I crashed. I do remember I crashed after this cutscene and I had to replay it.
Huh.
This game, we're going to get more, like, the longer this season goes on, I have a feeling we're going to be talking more and more about bugs. So far, relatively rare bugs. In any case, there is a dialogue where Kethric can say that, but in the version, in the footage that I have from, like, this save, he does not. But I just know that behind some dialogue choice, I don't know what happened. In any case, Kethric asks me, what do you think should happen to these old goblins? And I'm like, I don't care. You know, they're goblins. Just kill them. They're no good. And the goblins get really angry and they throw a, you know, bad security here. They throw a spear directly into Kethric Thorne's chest.
I thought it was like the neck region.
Oh, no, it's not even a spear. I'm looking at the footage now. It's a big old, like, halberd slash pole arm.
Yeah.
And it is from, like, below his, like, nipple on his chest all the way up to his shoulder. It's, practically cutting him in half.
Yeah.
And it looks like he's dead, and then immediately he pops up out of his throne. He pulls it out of his chest. He drops it at the goblin's feet and says, try again. The goblin then picks it up and swings at his neck, almost cutting his head off. And then he pulls it out. And then he just does a wrestling maneuver where he like balls his two hands up and smashes the goblin's head. And then he tells Zrel to dispose of the rest of them as we see fit.
Huh?
Yeah. Did you have any other different interactions here?
I don't think this can go all that different. You can even be kind of sassy to him, and it still kind of railroads you through the conversation to him, asking you to do whatever you want to do with the goblins, I believe.
Gotcha. And at the very end, just as he leaves, this is the little bit of dialogue I remembered. But now that I'm looking through the footage, it's like it wasn't at the beginning when I was actually interacting with him. It's as he's walking away. He says, mm-hmm. Let us take advantage of our surprising guest and their particular creative genius.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So he does recognize me. And he knows I'm good at murdering.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But how does he know that?
I think we're going to figure that out, this act.
Oh.
Yeah. We're going to get some really interesting stuff going on in episode 10, I think.
I'm hearing you.
Yeah.
Episode 10. Mm-hmm. Are you sure you don't mean episode
9? We're in episode 8.
That's correct.
Yeah, and I'm highlighting it.
I see. I'm just making sure. I'm making sure you're on the money. Mm-hmm. You know, don't you try to keep me honest on the money. I'm making sure you're on the money. So what happens? So Cuthric Thorne gets up, Bebop's on up his little tower. And this all basically happens the same for me, too. Nearly identical. And then you have to talk to Zarel, his, like, number two. She's a cleric, maybe? A wizard? What is she? Do we know?
I kind of got sorcerer vibes from Zarel, but I mean, we're going to find out that she's kind of like a psionicist. That's kind of her deal.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not really its own thing in this universe, though, right? Or in this like, version of the thing. I don't know if that's its own thing in 5th edition either.
At this point, probably in a splat book somewhere. But, right. But yeah, I do know, you know, we're going to find out there's going to be a battle with Zarel later, at least for me. And I'll be able to like look through the footage and kind of ascertain what spell list she's pulling from.
Well, she like immediately when you talk to her as you explore the tower in like just a minute, she like kills an ogre with her mind for fun.
Yes. That's actually that's her special ability.
Is kill you with a thought?
Yeah. She can sever the strands of life, yeah.
Oh, my God! Like a Norn!
Like a Norn.
Oh, my God! She's Norn! She's got Norn blood!
Balthazar, I see you have Norn blood from the Fey folk.
So what did you do with these goblins?
I told them I used my bug power to force them to eviscerate themselves.
What?
Yeah, I just looked at
them
and
I thought bad stuff.
Make me run me a bath of blood.
What?
And then their eyes started glowing purple, and then they stabbed themselves in the stomach.
Lord.
Yeah. I smiled when I did it, so I know that my character
Balthazar
liked it.
Balthazar is a real scamp. I will say, making the thumbnails for these, a lot of Balthazar smiling.
he finds his joy, you know?
Yeah.
He's looking through he's thinking about all of the things he could do. I could go mow the lawn. Frown. That does not bring me joy.
Yeah.
Right? I could do some laundry. Frown. Does not bring me joy. Ooh, could force goblins to eviscerate themselves. That brings me joy.
That makes sense to me. I just let him go. Tiklvar says, well, look, if there's a choice you have to make between killing the goblins, and I guess the opposite of that would be exalting the goblins, making them your god, following their every whim, and chasing them into the afterlife, as a kind of maximal spirit of sorcerer prowess, right? You got to choose the thing in the middle, which is ignoring them. When in doubt, say nothing. When in doubt, ignore them.
Yeah.
Tiklvar lets them go. And everyone says, why'd you do that? And it says,
oh,
they're goblins. They're goblins. There's a spell plague out there, whatever the hell it is, shadow curse. They'll get up to their own deal. Yeah, so they run out.
I think this might be the conclusion of a quest that we both of us did not complete.
Which one is that?
So do you remember Saza?
Yeah,
so Saza was the goblin NPC that was imprisoned in the Druid's Grove.
Yep.
If you escort her to the Shattered Sanctum, which I don't think either of us did.
No.
She'll actually, there's a lot of like additional dialogue you can get of like getting past the guards. Like, she basically gives you a free ride. You don't have to do any checks on your way in. And eventually when she confronts Minthara and she tells Minthara, like, hey, I brought these idiots to you. Minthara's like, oh, these idiots are true souls. You messed up, Saza. You mis-ID'd them. You can save Saza then. And if you saved her then she will be at the audience chamber in Moonrise Towers. And like, so it will be Saza instead of these two random goblins. And if you save her once again in Act Two, you get a you get an achievement. She cannot be caged.
Huh.
Yeah, you got to rescue her from Emerald Grove, the Goblin Camp, and Moonrise Towers in one playthrough.
Huh.
The road not traveled.
Cameron. Of course.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they went down the road. Out of my goddamn game. I don't think I ever saw him again.
Mm-hmm.
So they go out and do that. And then because everyone, both of our games, because everyone thinks you're like, I mean, you, I guess you are a true soul, right? True souls being people who are infected with a tadpole.
Even though most true souls don't know that.
Is that true? They don't know they got a bug in their brain?
Yeah. So like Priestess Gut had a bug in her brain. She was not aware that that being a true soul was getting a bug in your brain. There are like, so there are, I think that like most true souls, in fact, are like, they think that
they're like, we're just good at psionics now.
Yeah. They think that they are just chosen by the absolute and they've been blessed in some way. I do think that there's evidence here in Act Two to say that like the upper echelon of true souls. Sure. Like Zrel probably knows, but there's a little bit of plausible deniability there.
Huh. Interesting. Mm-hmm. So we just get the ability to like doodle all around, basically, and like do whatever you want. You can't go to the tippy top of the tower because Kethric Thorn is there doing some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's like up there chanting or something. We don't really know, but you can't get to the top of the tower. You're not supposed to, but you can kind of go anywhere else you want. There's a couple quests you can pick up here. One is finding Balthazar,
and I bet you said, I get
but
so
I'm, but I'm
angry.
Right here.
I'm so like,
I'm
angry.
Right here. I'm Balthazar.
We've already done this in a game.
We did already do this in a game. We did already Balthazar one time.
Mm-hmm.
Thrown
a ball, right?
Throne of ball.
Mm-hmm.
So basically there's a Kethric Thorne's got a crew. You know, that's the version of Andre the Giant's got a posse. Kethric Thorne's got a crew, right?
Mm-hmm.
His crew is Zarel. His crew is Balthazar. Right?
Yeah.
And there's some like other hangers on, but those are the two primary. There's like the bugbear merchant. I guess he's part of the crew, technically.
Sure.
But basically what you see in Moonrise Towers is you are seeing Kethric Thorne's camp, right? Like when we go to camp and we got all our guys hanging out, this is his camp, which is
it's his hub. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's his hub. It's where it's how he's waging this war.
Yeah. When he is wandering around the map and he says, oop, I need to sleep. And he clicks the little button. This is where he goes back to.
Yeah.
He teleports here. I like that. I like a base. I like a Suikoden. You know what I mean?
Well,
I'm
and
a
also,
simple guy.
There's point
I like
and
a
counterpoint.
Ni no Kuni too. I'm a simple person.
Oh, I love it. And there's point and counterpoint here because we have Kethric's base and we've got like the Harper base. Or
hey,
you do.
Know there's a, you do know rather. There's a new game coming out from the Suikoden people this year?
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, you're messing me up, buddy. I got to finish my honor mode run.
Oh, I'm messing you up. You got a couple months, I think. I think you got
it.
But, oh, yeah, we're in it. We're going. That's Mages and Murder Dead's next season. Just playing a random, brand new game in the Suikoden lineage.
Oh. I'm sure there's some threads, right?
Yeah, why not?
How
I mean,
far
I figured
back
when I was doing
go.
All that research back in the day, or not back in the day, but you know, a while back, I found out that Baldur's Gate 2 only has romances because the developers looked at the fan response to Final Fantasy VII, and they were like, "We got to get that in there."
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, sure. You know, I'm sure there's something. But so that this is his crew, these are his people, and you kind of wander around and talk to them. You can pick up a quest. There's a necromancer named Balthazar who is like helping Kethric Thorne out because he is, as we have seen already, immortal in some way.
He's immortal, and the Dream Guardian even will like ping your brain. You'll get a little notification. If this were, you know, premium television, a little text bubble would appear on the screen, like 5 feet wide. And the Dream Guardian says, "Hey, you're not ready to face Kethric Thorne. You gotta do some. You gotta figure out how to circumvent his, oh, I don't know, immortality.
Right.
His invulnerability, basically. So, you know, I'm a simple man as a player, but I'm thinking, okay, well, if some entity's wandering around the world, invulnerable, immortal, mm-hmm. usually, like, if they're a lich, there's a phylactery at play, right?
Yeah.
If there's, you know, even Vlokith's got one of those, right?
Yeah.
We don't know where it is. Could be anywhere in the astral plane.
Uh-huh.
But
say Kethric, more.
Yeah, but so we know that Kethric Thorne has some, there's some power that's like fueling this immortality. And we are given like some information about Balthazar's doing some work for him that's really important. So, you know, you're kind of thinking, is that maybe related? Is there something going on there?
Right.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, so we're provoked to do that, and Balthazar is, like, doing something involving that in a crypt somewhere.
Sure.
So we can, like, poke around. Zarel is like, you can go, hey, go find this guy, and you can poke around in his, like, little apartment here in order to figure out where he's at. And mm-hmm. this dude's, he's a sicko.
He is a sicko, yeah. He's got some mean traps in his bedroom.
He does.
He's got a bookshelf that its only purpose is just to absolutely starch people.
Yeah, that definitely doesn't happen in my game, for sure. There's like no footage of me just like repeatedly getting nuked by this bookshelf.
To no end. There's not anything. Is there even anything being guarded there?
I think there's some like things. Scrolls. That don't matter. Yeah. Yeah. You can like, you figured out, but yeah, he's a necromancer and he's like the grossest kind. You know what I mean?
Sure.
He is not, like just some guy with some spikes on him who's like doing teal magic in the world, right? He is like ripping people apart and putting them back together again.
Yeah. And, for Balthazar, because I don't have any way to like get the Shadow Curse at bay, I only got to Moonrise because I was like, you know, hugging a Drider, like basically holding onto a Drider leg as the Drider like led me here.
Yeah.
Zarel says, hey, I think that Balthazar had like a spare lantern, mm-hmm. Like a moon lantern. So I'm able to pick one of those up in Balthazar's suite. You can also explore more, and with my sleight of hand gloves and like my guidance necklace and like all of these things, I'm able to pick the lock to Kethric's apartment. Where did you poke around in there?
No. I've never across any of my games, I've never attempted to do this.
Yeah, he's got a bony dog. He's got a skeleton dog.
That's like alive?
Yeah, it's like an undead skeleton dog.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking. Well, what happens? Does it attack you?
I use some animal handling to defuse the situation.
So it's got like a big comical bomb fuse coming out of it, is what you're saying.
Exactly.
I don't understand metaphors. You're going to have to help me out here.
It's true. But the dog doesn't bother me. I am able to like poke around, and you do see there are a couple of things that kind of stick out. You see a lot of writing he's done about his dead wife. And you can find out that his wife was a cleric of Saloon. So there was, I'm getting a little bit of the arc of Kethric's kind of character in terms of this is a character who has fallen from grace. This is a character who at one time was not a Shar worshiper, but there's kind of like a point in the time where he was like kind of a good guy, and then his wife died, and then he transitioned from Saloon worship to Shar worship, and he was involved in a bunch of bad stuff after that. And then there's kind of question mark, because now obviously he's not serving Shar, he's serving the Absolute. So what's going on there?
Huh. Yeah, we don't know who he is serving the Absolute at this point, right?
That's what we know. That's what right. we know, okay. Yeah. We
it just is know. Interesting that, mm-hmm. that will change at some point, and it feels to me still, second time through the game, that kind of comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, no, and you know, we talked about it last episode. Sometimes plot beats just get dropped on you from a letter, and sometimes plot beats just kind of get dropped on you in a cinematic, and that's what's going to happen in Baldur's Gate 3. But yeah, it's we're going to have a lot to talk about at the end of this act, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so too, because there is a gear shift that happens there.
Truly. So yeah, I poke around in his apartment. I look around. There's some there's a cool cloak in here at some point. I'm wearing that now in the footage. And
what's it do for you?
Oh, it's just like some bonus. It doesn't matter because I like a lot of the bonuses I get, if they're not just adding to throwing damage, they don't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's how I'm navigating the game. I'm like right. A single tool that does one thing. And when I'm in an environment with like gnarly roots or stalactites and my throwing arc is interrupted, even though I can see the enemy, my throwing arc is interrupted, Balthazar gets sad. Because it's like taking a specialized tool. It's like taking a Dremel and you're like, oh, well, you need to cut this 2x4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, only toward the end of the game did I start getting like kind of pissed off about the like, why can this creature not see this other creature?
Sure.
There are some level design things going on later in this game that are like actively frustrating.
I'm going to be honest. My theory is that Act 1 just got so much playtesting time in the early access that so many of the rough spots got sanded off.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a lot of battle arenas in Act 2 and Act 3 that just did not get those iterations, those like little tweaks over time.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
In any case, Balthazar also just kind of looks around the tower in general. I meet some cool people. Did you meet the gnolls?
Yes.
Yeah, they are in the kitchen. They're trying to the Cult of the Absolute's a pretty inclusive spot. They're really trying. Everybody's invited, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Did you?
That's kind of what's happening, right? These gnolls are being like mind dominated.
Yeah.
And being like taught language against their will.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess what you're saying is correct in a big technical way.
Like the Borg. The Borg are big tech.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I don't, you know, I guess I agree. It's sad. And I believe that I freed them. I don't remember what I did exactly with them. Let me look at the footage. Let me look at the old footerino here.
I can talk about Araj while you're doing that, if you wish.
Please.
So I meet a drow named Araj Oblodra.
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 Clearly you don't know jack shit. About
Underdark pronunciation, the noble house.
Yes, House of Oblodra, which was originally part one of the many houses in Menzo Baranzan, underneath House Bainry, when House Bainry remained the top dog house of Menzo Baranzan. And House of Oblodra was famous for having warped their, whatever they have other than DNA, their blood with illithid. Stuff. They got a lot of that kind of shit going on. They're like doing some crossing of species and all kinds of things going on there. And they've got psionic abilities.
Mm.
So they are not, if Loth's disfavor comes upon you, right, you can't defend yourself because your priestess's magic doesn't work, right?
Sure.
If you've got psionic abilities, no priestess involved in that shit.
Keep doing it. I remember this being a plot point, and like there was a novel set in the time of Troubles.
Yes, I think that my knowledge of this comes from I think one of the early Drizzt Do'Urden books.
Mm-hmm.
It's in one of them that I read a couple years ago. But yeah, so there's a lot of history behind her, and currently, canonically, you know, 100 years after the Ballspawn Crisis, I believe that they are a scattered house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there you go.
In any case, she's looking for some cool blood. She likes blood.
Yeah.
And this is, I pop into my camp, I grab Asterion. I bring him back here. And she says, oh, wow. This guy's, I can tell, this guy's got some weird blood stuff going on. This guy looks like a vampire.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, sure enough, he's my vampire. I pat a little stare on the back. This guy's mm-hmm. my vampire. And yep. And she says, well, I am willing to give you something real cool if you have him drink my blood. Like, I want to experience that for uh-huh. science. Just have him take a sip. And Asterion turns to me and he's like, please don't make me do this. There's her blood's like, I can smell it from here. It smells bad. There's bad stuff in there. And I say, my dude, just take the sip.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, no, I would never.
You're really bullying this dude's ass into doing it.
And I say, don't be dramatic. Take the bite.
Jeez.
And he gets so angry. And then he kind of like, I do like that the way that they've done the acting is like, once I've like bullied him and he's decided, he has like this feigned, okay, I'm going to bite you. And mm-hmm. he does so for a few seconds. And then he just starts coughing and like, oh, it's so awful. It's bad. And he's like, ugh. But he's fine. He's fine.
Yeah, do we want to talk about his plot line here and why this matters?
Well, here's the interesting thing. I've never done it.
I mean, I'm aware. I've also never done it, but I'm aware of it.
Okay, go for it.
The basic pitch behind it, and someone can correct me if I'm wrong here, but my understanding of the Asterion, so leave a comment if you have more information to share here. But my understanding of the Asterion thing is that basically he's been this... for his vampire master, right? Who we don't
know. Yeah, because there are vampires and then there are vampire spawn. And a vampire spawn is like you don't complete the full ritual and process of becoming a quote unquote true vampire.
Well, you're also just like kind of like you're a little bit enslaved, right?
Yeah, you're a thrall.
Mm-hmm. You are kept depowered, right? So it's not like you didn't do all the right stuff. It is you are being prevented from being like a true vampire.
Yeah, because in order to become a true vampire, you have to drink the blood of the, you know, the vampire that turned you.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, he says it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So what's going on is like, and later in the game, you can find this out too, even if you don't ever talk to Asterion. Like I said last time, I still never really talked to Asterion, but basically he was the kind of like enslaved, what do you call it? Kind of like attractant for his vampire lord. So he's like going out and seducing all these people and bringing them in. And so his, I think there's the strong association with the Asterion character with doing vampire stuff, with having to do, doing things you don't want to do, right? Being forced into these things. And there's this kind of sexual dynamic to it too. You know, that's part of a lot of vampire lore. Mm-hmm. And so I think the way that we are supposed, even though this is like, in its singularity, right, is taken as a kind of like, Asterion, why don't you just do the thing you're supposed to do, right? Like, we're all in a video game here. I think the way if you are buddied up to Asterion, right?
Oh, you definitely would see the what's going on in terms of non-consent.
Right, exactly. I think it's supposed to like hit a different thing, but I'm with you because I didn't have that. I resolved this in a very similar way. And I was like, what is the deal? You're a vampire. You know what I mean? So it is interesting how these scenes, I think it's cool. I think it's a benefit, not even just interesting. I think it's cool that these scenes that, just like in real life, right, can play very differently based on the amount of information you have about somebody. Right?
And I think that this is a divisive point of this game, to be honest. And yeah. I think that there are, yeah. like, it really, this kind of thing informs a lot of players, a lot of specific players that are looking for a specific, like, experience.
Yeah.
It informs how they interact with this game and their attitude towards it.
I'm sure that there are people who just heard my summary of that and find it infuriating because I have not taken into account the full sum total of Asterion as a character, which for lots of people, and this works this way in lots of video games, we've talked about this a lot over on Homestuck Made This World,
yeah.
Michael and I, right? This the idea that the whole experience is the thing you need to be aware of that informs your understanding of every moment, right? And so, like,
yeah.
player phenomenally. This is an interesting scene that plays a very different way for you and I than it does for someone who has been invested in the Asterion, you know, plot line. And that is actually good narrative design, right? It's good narrative design that you can have a complex character where partial knowledge might tell you something different than someone else. But I think you're right. I think even at this point, there are a lot of fandom dynamics going on in this game that maybe doesn't find that as appealing as I do.
Yeah, and I think that the big question, one of the big questions that I did not have, that I did not want to address or wrestle with when we started recording this show, but as we move along, it's kind of looming in my brain. It's in terms of like how to evaluate these kinds of specific, very, these kinds of art forms that have these incredibly contingent elements, right, of experience. And I think that our, like, even our decision, we've only at this point we've published one episode, but I think that there were some people that were like, oh my gosh, I cannot believe Gale is not a part of this, right?
Yeah.
Or I cannot believe Will is just not going to be a part of this game.
But they I don't know that yet by that point.
Oh, sure.
They're gonna find that out shortly.
Yep. I just think it's so interesting because I think we're kind of primed from a period of, you know, our previous playthroughs of Baldur's Gate 1 and 2 where you can't have a playthrough where you play with all the companions because, like, they all level up separately. You kind of do have to, like, choose some lanes, you know?
No, you can. You can. It just, the game, and this does actually make it, some things that we saw around release make a lot more sense to me, is that there are lots of people playing the game who are just rotating out constantly.
Gotcha.
In order to get all those like story beats and all those things. And I, God, that's got to add 50 hours to your playtime.
It, right? It must. But, yeah. And that's just, like, I guess, irrespective of what you could or could not do in BG1 or 2, neither of us ever did that. I don't think that's ever been like a thing that we did in the show or even just like if we were playing that game before.
You know, I pick a party and I play the game with the party.
Yeah.
And if I want to get the other party experience, I just play with a different party.
Yeah. But we're playing this game in a way that we are going to not be in on all of the lore for large stretches of the time. And we're just going to have incomplete information. We're gonna, our characters are going to be reacting and interacting with the world from positions of partial information or ignorance. Yeah. And I do think that that is cool. But also, if you are only going to play Baldur's Gate 3 once, and I think this is the thing, is like, because it's a big game, and I don't think it's unfair for like the average person to be like, you know what, I'm playing this game once. Do you think most people, if you were like my buddy Scott, who killed Karlach without ever talking to her, he saw her across the river and killed her. If you were like my buddy Scott, who saw the portal that Gale's hand was sticking out of and was like, well, that's dangerous. I'm not interacting with that.
Yeah.
And just like played the whole game and had this whole experience with the parts removed. You know, what is the effect of that? What is the attitude that the player will end up having to be like, did they feel like they missed something or did they feel like this was a completely intentional? The fact that they missed it was completely intentional and built in. You know, that's a complicated question.
It is a guy. Yeah, I have no idea. What does he feel like? Is he like, oh, I missed something?
So I think that for Scott, it's like, oh, well, I'll play it again. I'll play it again and get those experiences. But I do wonder, what I wonder is, for the people who are only going to play once, is the go-to move, okay, just open a Wikipedia so that you can like cherry pick all of the experiences that you want to have and not quote unquote miss them.
I think that the varieties of play are so wide that it's hard to answer that question. I think to do that, you have to be a level of knowledgeable player to be like, there's a big wiki that I could find and read the like startup guide.
Yeah.
But it's clear that there was a huge amount of people looking for that information when this game launched, because every website, right? And this is it's an SEO race, right? If you begin to see every website, you know, games website or whatever, publishing something very similar in the kind of guides direction, it is because those are SEO terms that are showing up, right?
Yeah.
And whether that's because someone on the team is really good at predicting that stuff, or whether that is because they are following a trend and they're trying to get certain keywords up, right? Whatever way the wind is blowing, it does tell you that there is desire, right?
Yeah.
And here's what you should know in the first 5 hours of Baldur's Gate 3 was the style of article that was,
don't make these five mistakes.
Right. And those things like still hit, right? There are videos on YouTube of that kind of thing with like millions of views on them still, that are still accruing stuff because people are continuing to play the game. This game has enough people still entering it that they are releasing a new physical edition, right? Because that is going to capture not just already people who have played and then also additional people. Right. So, it's still in a growth area as far as I can tell. So I think that most people probably just play the game and they play it one time. And if they didn't see something that is an evocation of, wow, this game is huge and big.
Sure.
I don't think most people do what we do. Like, I don't think the majority of people do what we do, which is like learning about every possible quest and then figuring out how we can route them. You know?
Yeah. Or I think that, you know, we did the even more maximalist thing of one playthrough without information.
Yeah.
And then then cracking it open.
But also we were constantly talking to each other across those playthroughs. And between the two of us, we experienced everything in the game, as far as I know.
Yeah.
Like, I think I hit a couple things you didn't, but I think you probably hit 95% your first time through.
Maybe, of the experiences that could have been afforded, given the decisions I made.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, interesting little moment there. But the upshot is a little potion that gives me +2 strength. So let's do the strength math. Start at 16 strength for Balthazar. Get +1 for Tavern Brawler. Get +1 from making a deal with Auntie Ethel. And now +2 from the from this potion. So, yeah, up to 20 strength, really good.
Yeah, this quest keeps going. I gave her my blood. I did all the same things you did.
Yeah.
Have you finished this quest? Do you know how this quest ends in Act 3?
I do.
It's very good.
Yeah, we'll talk about it. I think we'll make room for it. It's good.
We absolutely will. I do know what I did with the gnolls. I selected an option. Ticklefar has used his brain powers like 3 times total in the whole playthrough. And this one is one where I had the option of sever her connection for good. And I thought that would free the gnolls from her mind powers. It did not free the gnolls. It killed them. So I killed the gnolls with my brain powers.
Dang, did you get experience?
I don't know, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't looking that close.
Yeah.
But that's the most Balthazar-esque question you could be asking.
It's true.
Did you get experience?
Did you get experience?
I am wearing, by the way, the Cat's Grace. Do you know about this thing?
Yes.
This cloth armor that just sets your dexterity to 18 and gives you advantage on like everything dexterity-oriented?
Gives advantage on all dexterity checks and also gives you resistance to falling damage. It's sold by the woman who is looking to get that Githyanki egg.
Oh, right.
And
I bought this back when I talked to the Githyanki egg lady.
Yeah, who's wearing it?
I didn't know that.
Oh, no. But
I thought you were saying she is wearing it. Who's on first? Ticklefar wears it.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Just increasing that AC. Throughout the rest of the game, Ticklefar will carry this piece of armor, and anytime I need to lockpick something, he will put it on.
Yeah.
And will lockpick the hell out of it. So, it works great.
It's fantastic. It really is. I slept on that item. Like, I looked at it, and it just didn't really click how good Cat's Grace is, but it's way better than the sleight of hand gloves.
Yeah,
because it's all dexterity checks, which includes stealth.
Mm-hmm.
So really great item. Kind of a little bit of monk itemization, but it's one of those monk items that casters can wear perfectly well. And maybe even some unarmored barbarian builds, too.
We'll talk about this, but there is some like real horse shit around monk items in this game. I cannot tell you the number of quests that, we talked about this in the Underdark a little bit with those gloves, right? But like the number of quests across this game where it ends and you get the little pop up of like, you got the the staff of whipping ass or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or like, you know, the cloak of ass kicking, and it's like blah blah blah, and then, you know, it's like some minor effect really, and then the major effect is like you can do two more unarmed attacks per round or whatever, right? You know, it gets this like, or your unarmed attacks do like +4 fire damage each.
When you use an unarmed attack to push an enemy and they take falling damage, the falling damage gets 5 more damage,
right? There's just like weird and I'm like, why is that not, there's nothing for sorcerers like that. I think across this whole game, the only thing I found for sorcerers that's like a straight good item for sorcerers is a hat.
Oh, that's a shame. So you missed out the bard's cloak in the last light in?
No, I have it too.
Because that's phenomenal. That adds
It's a cloak or it's
robe?
Like clothing. It's a robe. I have the robe too, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
But that's not that good of an item. It adds your charisma
mod to cantrips.
Yeah. Well, look, I'm just telling you, at the end of this game, being able to, like, firebolt or whatever for 27 damage is cool, but not earth-shattering.
No, that's
true. It's not the same as being able to hit an additional time or...
I think the problem is cantrips are really good if you are in a mode where you cannot rest a lot because it costs a lot of supplies to rest, and you kind of have to be really diligent. And in that way, being able to, like, boost your cantrips lets you go longer and save your big spells. But in balanced difficulty, you really need to be short resting after every fight. And when you are missing short rests, you need to long rest. Because especially as a sorcerer, it's like, hey, you got fireball, buddy. You want to cast fireball every fight. It's fun. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do that. Don't deprive yourself of that. So, no, that makes sense that, like, an additional couple of damage to Firebolt isn't that great.
Every fight opens with somewhere around here, right? A fireball or an ice storm. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Tycholvar only casts AoE. You know what I mean? Like, occasionally we get the Firebolt for 30 or whatever. But for the most part, we are just obliterating multiple people at one time because that's cool to do. Why would it, as you just said, why would I deny myself the pleasures of the sorcerer?
And as you, I think, mentioned in the opening episode, there's probably some fights that begin with fireball, quicken spell, bonus action fireball.
Yes. That's a non-zero number of fights.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, though, having just basically only chosen offensive spells that are AoE attacks, sometimes Tycholvar doesn't have a lot to do in combat. Shoot a cantrip or whatever.
That's when you're happy you got the cantrip damage.
When it's not helpful is when you can't see the person.
Sure.
Due to, like, Warzone 3 head glitch issues. You know what I mean? It's like that. It's like, can I get in his POV and, like, have Tycholvar stand on tippy toes for 2 seconds? Because I can definitely see the line of sight here.
This is especially bad and especially hard for the shorter races.
Oh my god!
If you are a halfling,
I didn't even think about it.
If you are a halfling, it draws an arc from your bow, right?
Well, walls or head high walls. If you're a halfling,
let me tell you something. When you are just shooting your bow as a halfling, you're kind of like, you've just got a normal ass bow shooting stance, right? But when you select the sneak attack option, you crouch into a tactical sneak attack stance, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there are hits you can make with the normal stance that you all of a sudden cannot when your head is 3 inches shorter. Now, luckily in the game, you can set a reaction to, like, automatically apply the sneak attack damage if you are eligible for it. So you don't have to manually select. But that is how much, like, it took playing a rogue for me to understand, oh my god, that is how, like, granular this is. That it is drawing a actual line from your character model. And if your character model stance changes, it matters.
And guess what? Tactical view? Least helpful thing on the planet for this.
Yeah.
Because it is a combat engine that is dependent on 3 dimensions.
Yeah.
Tactical view is not helping me out here. But
no, and it's a problem for, like, things above, like, a level above you, and there's
this is not just complaining. These are things that begin to appear at about this point in the game. You know what I mean? Like, real things. And in fact, kind of ended up mattering for a thing I did that maybe you didn't. Did you go down to the prison below?
Here's the thing. I did not do the prison this run through, so you can talk a lot about that.
So we know that Zevlor has been, he's disappeared, presumed to be kidnapped.
He has disappeared in your game. He's very dead in mine.
Correct.
Yeah.
He's disappeared in my game.
Mm-hmm.
Zevlor's disappeared. We got the tiefling. Remember, I talked to Roland, and he's like, my two buddies are disappeared. You know, they are gone. When you talk to, I don't have that robe at this point because I have spoken to the bard, and she's like, my best friend's gone. Maybe they're closer than friends. I don't know. I can't remember. But I got a tiefling companion who is also not here. Uh-oh. You know, we got that going on, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a bunch of tiefling. So I have a quest that, I have two quests that seem to be the same quest at this point, right? One is like, and actually I've got three. I've got find the tieflings. Okay. Find Zevlor, which is a separate thing. And then find Maul. Remember, who got abducted by winged horrors.
That's
in
right.
The previous episode. So I got all that. And those all kind of have, you know, quest markers in the tower. So I know there's a prison. I go down into the prison. And I do a little some scouting around. In the cells, there are two different groups of people. There are tieflings. It's the tieflings. Is it me you're looking for? These are the tieflings I've been looking for.
Yes.
And then there are some deep gnomes down there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, ooh, okay. One of the deep gnomes says, and I don't remember who this is. Do you remember what the name of this deep gnome is by any chance?
Is it Wolbrin? Is it the head guy that you're talking
it
to?
It is Wolbrin, the guy who I couldn't remember before.
Yeah.
It is Wolbrin, and I can say I saw Barkus down in the Grimforge. He told me you were here. I'm here to rescue you, right?
Yeah.
And so I didn't actually do that. I didn't say Barkus told me to do blah, blah, blah. I was like, I know these tieflings. I'm going to get you out too. And he says, look, I'm good at escaping shit because I'm, you know, a gnome, I guess.
Yeah, because I have stone affinity.
Because his name is Wolbrin Bongle. That's why. You know, if you meet a Wolbrin Bongle in the road, ask him about rocks.
Imagine being a deputy warden at a state prison. And you're looking
and
through
Wolbrin
the new
Bongle, the deep gnome shows
up. You're looking at the roster of the inmates coming in, and mm-hmm. you see just one named Wolbrin Bongle. I think that there's an element of like, just lose him on the way.
Oh, like, yeah. You don't want him getting in. It's actually worse for him to get in the prison.
Yeah.
He's going to cause more damage in there.
Have him escape the bus, right? That's like mm-hmm. transporting him there. You don't want to ruin your reputation. Hope that he gets into another jurisdiction and goes to a different prison so a different deputy warden can deal with that scandal.
You take the prison wagon like on a big roundabout route to like leave him in, what are the purple knights? Where are they from? Hold on, I gotta get the joke right. The purple knights, this is from Faerun. Hold on, where are they from? Cormyr.
Oh yeah.
You gotta take a long route through Cormyr so that it becomes the purple knights problem.
That's right.
but yeah, so Wolbrin's in there and he's like, listen, here's the deal. He's like, we need something to smash out with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we need like a hammer or something like that, and I'll get us out. I don't have a rogue or a thief, right?
Okay.
You know, I don't have any of this stuff. It takes me a long time. It takes me like a full hour to like resolve this whole thing because mm-hmm. I'm trying to be sneaky because I'm afraid. And this is like good game design, I think. The prison's in a different map, right?
Yeah.
You got to like go through a loading screen to get there.
Mm-hmm.
If I hostile the people down here in the prison, will it hostile everyone in the tower? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I truly don't know. So I'm like, this indeterminacy in my mind, and I guess I could like attack them, leave, see what happens, right?
Yeah.
But I don't do that. I'm trying to play it straight up. And so I'm like, all right, I will try to resolve this without combat. So what I do is I get Lazel, noted sneaky creature, Lazel.
Sure.
In full heavy armor.
Oh no.
I get Lazel. It's really cool. The the whole tower is a circle, or, you know, it's a column from basement to tippy top.
Yeah.
So the prison's a circle. It is a central tower, a big air gap with some bridges over it, and then the prison on the outside of it, right?
Yeah.
So you can, like, go around the whole thing. So I, like, scout the whole thing. I do find a big fleshy hole in the ground that it looks like bodies were thrown into.
Yep.
And I actually tried to jump into it. You can't jump it, or I couldn't jump into it. Could you jump into it? Is this jump intoable?
It's jump intoable, yeah.
Oh. I tried to do it, and I, like, couldn't get the little thing to, like, verify. You know,
yeah, so the thing about the jump is, in the same way for line of sight, there is this arc, and so you have to be the exact correct amount of space away from the wall. Otherwise, you're hitting the wall, and it won't let you jump into a wall, as opposed to, like, the middle of the hole.
In the middle of the hole.
Correct.
Yeah, I didn't play with it too much. I was like, oh, can I jump into this? And I kind of got the red X, and I was like, okay, whatever, I'll leave. But I get Lazelle sneaking around. The central tower in the middle of this prison is, like, where the warden's office is. So you can, like, sneak up to the top, you can do some jumping, and maybe that's actually why I chose Lazelle, thinking about it, is I think her jump, because she's very athletic.
And she's got Githyanki jump, like a special racial super jump.
I don't think I'm to that point where that unlocks yet.
You definitely are, because that's an act one thing. Yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe mm-hmm. I had it, but I didn't need it, maybe.
Yeah.
So she's boop, 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 boop. She jumps all the way up. And there's a patrol route, you know?
Yeah, like, no, and
it's a prison.
Yeah, and, like, a lot of those scrying eyes kind of, mm-hmm. like, overlapping and patrolling and moving yeah. through.
Yep. And so I sneak into the office. There's, like, a little ledge you can stand on, and I sneak into the office. And I, like, accidentally get into combat, and I reload. And then I get into the office. I loot the whole thing as Lazelle, sneaking around, hitting the sneak button. I leave. I walk on the big stone rafters to the and I because I don't have, like, a, you know, a mace or anything.
Hammer. Sure,
I get a, there are some in there. I get that. I scooch on over. I walk over the rafter and throw the mace into the cell from the rafter, where I assume no one can see me.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm wrong about that.
Okay.
Because ultimately I do end up in combat after of this work that I do. And I think mm-hmm. you kind of have to, because I do believe that, like, it initiates combat when they start their prison break. Basically, Wolbrin is like, hey, I'm gonna knock out the back wall here, and I'll take the tieflings with me, and we can, like, hook up later. Now let me see what happens.
Yeah.
I'm looking at my footage. No, what occurs is they start the prison break, and then that starts combat, and I guess I could, like, defend them or just ignore them.
And I yeah, defended them. So I think that there are enough scrying eyes. It is possible, and on a previous playthrough, to, like, very diligently, and this is a time-consuming affair, to kind of, like, go into turn-based mode while patrols are in specific areas and, like, alpha down the scrying eyes without other people being aware.
Scrying eye, you can attack with impunity.
Yes.
Which is interesting to me.
You get a round, basically, or you might get two rounds. Like, on round one of combat, the first action will be, I'm going to alert people, and then on subsequent rounds, everything in the area will become hostile.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I think that it is possible to, like, eliminate enough lines of sight that no one
sees them escape.
Correct. But you've got to kill, like, a large number of people in order to actually do that.
Well, I ended up killing a large number of people by, in good old fashioned traditional 5th edition combat.
Sure.
And we fought on a little bridge, and that was fun. It was good, because they're all in the warden's, or a big bunch of the guards are in the warden's tower, right?
Yeah.
Now, something very funny, and people will be able to see the footage of this, something very funny that happened is, like, while, you know, the tieflings and the gnomes are escaping, they break through the wall and they find this, like, little area, and you can see it on the map, you know, while they're doing it, because they're in initiative, you can watch them take their actions. They find this little dock, right?
Yeah.
The gnomes run to the dock and begin, like, smashing the ropes that keep the what do you call it? Like the boat.
Yeah, the raft moored.
Right. The tieflings immediately turn around and begin like looting weapons out of barrels and stuff and start fighting.
Fighting who?
The guards. They come like way back and start fighting the guards.
Oh, because they're
like almost all the way through the thing.
They're in initiative order, and like because the boat is not available, they don't pile into the boat.
Because they have to break the boat. Yeah, I don't know. The AI here, because you would assume they would all just like crowd the boat, beat the moorings, you know, destroy them with their melee attacks, and then go from there. But no, they like loot weapons and then start running back into combat.
So the thing you can do, if you were able to jump into that fleshy hole that you mentioned, there's a way out of that fleshy hole.
Oh.
And the way out is accessible behind the prison cells.
Mm-hmm.
So it is possible for the player to get behind the prison cells before Wolbrin has like created a hole.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can go to the dock and destroy that rope. You can pre-destroy it.
Oh, and get him, kind of prep it for him.
I mean, and here you go. You can also just like destroy the walls from back behind there.
It'd be like, I'm here to get you.
I'm here to get you. Yeah,
that's cool. That's fine. That is good design, top to bottom. I like that. There's a lot of different ways to do this.
I'm actually, now that I'm talking about the prison, I'm sad I didn't do it this playthrough. The prison's good.
Like the prison's good. It's a good cool area. And it took me probably 45 minutes or so to do like the whole thing here, because there was a lot of like sneaking around, both in turn-based mode and not turn-based mode, and like paying attention. And I kind of like that. I'm not mad that I tried to do it one way and it didn't work out the way I wanted it to, because that felt like kind of a real scenario, right? It felt a lot like a tabletop game where it's like, sometimes you just fail that check, you know?
Yeah.
And the weird swerve of the AI of them being like, no, we're defending ourselves, that made me be like, okay, we're fighting on this bridge. That's very far away from where these new guards just came in to beat up these tieflings. I got to run over there like ASAP.
Yeah.
I understand why lots of the combats in this game do not change halfway through, because that is generally not a fun part of tactical role-playing game combat.
Right? What do you mean, like, change halfway through? Like reset positions?
No, not reset positions, but like that big transformations occur midway through the fight, right? So like what happens in this fight is that I'm fighting the prison guards while the people are escaping. The people who are escaping come back in the middle of the fight, and then that brought in more guards because they had not been aggroed yet, because they were like out of the thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that changed the stakes of the fight. It changed where the fight was taking place, right?
Yes.
Now I got it right. So like there was a big stakes change for me as a player. My first thing was, I need to get these guards down as quickly as possible because they are powerful and they are scary, and I'm worried that they might kill me and then kill these, you know, like creatures, right? In reality, I'll have to reload the game, right?
Yeah.
In the middle of the fight, it turned into, oh no, these tieflings are very squishy and I need to get over there and protect them, and it matters more to keep them from dying ASAP than it does for me to, like, power down these guards. That is really cool. That's also hard to design in a way that feels fair, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's hard to put that into the game purposefully. And I really don't think that there are very many fights in this game that have a pivot in the middle of them. There's a fight in Act 3 where there are, I don't want to spoil anything, but there it kind of takes place in the corner of the Baldur's Gate map, if you know what I'm talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some, we'll just say, cultists. Right.
Yes.
Running around, and in combat, they just start attacking civilians rather than you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really cool to be like, oh, my priorities are very different in this fight. I need to keep these civilians alive rather than that. I really like that stuff. And there's just not that much of it in the game because I don't think that's the way that D&D combat, like D&D module design, doesn't really lean that way.
No, the whole system is kind of arranged around. Every match is a death match.
Mm-hmm.
And I
Between
know
two
that
parties where yes. the where the stakes are set from beginning to end very clearly at the beginning.
Yeah. And for the most part, you know, if you look at module writing, the vast majority of fights are just kind of like assumed to be to the death. That is what you are fighting over. You are fighting over somebody dies, somebody lives. But
they've gotten better about that over the years. But
well, I mean, and also if you just like look at a lot of other RPG writing outside of just fifth edition, there's just a lot more emphasis on what are people doing? What do they actually want? Do the cultists really want to like kill you, or are they just out to cause chaos, etc.? Is this ogre actually going to wants to smash you, or do they have ulterior motives, right. etc.? So I think that the infusion, and especially because it's a surprise, because 90% of the fights in this game are okay, well, we are just fighting until we're all, you know, one side is completely dead. Having a wrench thrown into that, I think it kind of enlivens the fight. It certainly gets my attention.
Well, you know, we talked about it a few episodes back, but like the fight with the spectator where it unpetrifies and then dominates those party members, and you can like break the concentration on that or you know, undominate them and then they'll fight with you. That's a pivot in the middle of that fight that's very cool.
Yes.
And I just wish there was a little bit more of that in the game. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, now that I'm thinking about it, if we think about the fights that we have done so far, a lot of the highlights for me are, in fact, fights where there is some weird third-party stuff going on.
Yeah.
The Nier fight being an example of, like, there's a lot of permutations where the Nier fight can do that. The spectator fight is one of them. Even the owlbear fight and having those two people, like, those two cultists in there, that's kind of interesting. But,
And I think, you know, this is, I want to make it clear, this is not me like complaining about the combat of this game. It is actually to the game's credit that these things happen in the game, right?
Yeah.
Like, you can imagine a world in which none of that is in there. I just wish it, you know, it's maybe 10% of fights or maybe 1/15th of the fights. I wish it were, you know, 1/7th or something. I wish there were just a few more of them going on. They escape, and you have the option to be like, meet me at the end of the last light. Get on your boat, I'll see you there. Or you can be like, I'll go with you, I'll get on the boat, and wherever we go, because everything's like surrounded in mist fog. You know what I mean? We end up at the docks. Have you done this?
Yes, I have done this in a previous playthrough. You have to go through customs.
Yeah, you got to like talk to Harper. I was like, let's go to the end of the last light. Let's go to the docks. Whatever.
And this is a long sequence. Like, they really let you dwell here on. And like, they are, consciously or not, they are telling you everything you need to know about the Harpers. About like what this deal is.
The Harper, they're like, look, we are not letting anyone who's tadpoled here. And I'm like, well, these are the tieflings who are just with you. And they're like our people. You know what I mean? And these are a bunch of gnomes who are like imprisoned for who knows what. Right? Like, they're not cultists, and they're like, yeah, but we're gonna have to inspect them all. And there's an in engine, you know, it's not a cutscene, it is an in engine. It makes everyone line up against the wall, and the Harper goes by with its little tadpole in a you know, bug in a jar, little light, you know, lightning bug in a jar, and inspects all of them individually, one by one, in a scripted sequence.
Yeah. It's long. Yes. It's long. Yes. We're having to really be confronted with a specific ideology that the game, I don't know if the game is in on it or not, about like what do the quote unquote good guys have to look like in the world that is being depicted.
Yeah.
And apparently that is the security state. That
so is, I just set my camera up. I put my people off screen, and I set my camera up and just like walked away from this, and I recorded the entire inspection scene.
Yeah.
In a little like POV, so people be able to see that. Probably not the whole thing, but you get to see them doing that. I went and talked to Jahira a little bit, and then I talked to Wolbrin Bongle, and he was like, thanks so much. I'm out of here. I'm donezo.
Now, did Barkus and Wolbrin have a reunion? Because Barkus has been trying to find Wolbrin this whole time.
Barkus is still down in the Grimforge. Barkus does not come to the end of the last light.
Really?
Nope. They meet in Baldur's Gate.
Interesting. So you can convince Barkus to come to your camp. Were you able to convince Barkus to come to your camp?
No, I didn't try to. I just thought he had his dudes and they were going to do their own thing.
Gotcha. Okay, so if he comes to the camp, he does end up in the last slide in, but there is basically no interaction between him and Wolbrin while he's there. So you didn't miss too much.
So last thing about the prison break, the tieflings come out. You know what I mean? Like our two tiefling adventurers. And they're like, Roland, where is he? Lo and behold, drunk ass Roland has, he got his courage up, a little bit of liquid courage. He's now out in the Shadow Curse looking for these goofballs. He was going to go solo all of Moonrise Tower to get him out. He was doing a Balthazar.
Dang.
He's casting 9 cantrips a turn.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever. So I'm going to have to go get him later, but that's the next stage of this quest. Okay, tell me about the environs.
Sure.
Oh, you know what? Let me close that up because it's easy to do.
Yeah, go ahead and tell me what happened to Roland.
He's getting his ass kicked 200 yards out, 200 meters to the the metric people. He's getting his ass kicked like right outside, like down the block, and you can go rescue him and he's so ashamed. But he does come back and they all reunite.
Dang, my first playthrough, that combat, you know, you stumble upon it, and if you are not fast, he dies.
Yes, so it's like a bunch of shadow moss creatures or whatever they are, these plant, undead plant beings, and you can see it happening from far away. Basically, as soon as he's, like, renderable, the combat begins, and if you don't hustle over there, or, like, I just put it in turn-based mode immediately, so I could, like, dash and sprint, do all that stuff. If you don't do that, he gets mobbed pretty quick and gets taken out.
Gotcha.
This isn't an extra long episode. This is a normal episode.
This is a normal episode. It's still like, it's still longer than, my preference. My preference is the tight, 59 minutes.
Danny just doesn't believe in that the episode link should conform to content rather than content should conform to episode length. But that's acceptable. Patreon.com/rangetouch is where you want to go. Next episode, we're going to be talking about all the other stuff around Moonrise. There's like a little murdered out town there. We're going to be learning about that. I will say a little preview. Act 2 is the grab bag of random stuff.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. I think it's fun that it all coheres around. I like the idea that the Shadow Curse is the thing that makes it cohere together. There is a reason for all this stuff, but in terms of like individual stuff, it's just some things.
Yeah.
And it feels very much like a tightly done fifth edition splat book or module. But we'll get to that next time. We're going to talk about a bunch of those things in the next episode. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Hit the like button to let us know what is up. If you want to hear this as a podcast, it is available on YouTube Music or whatever that is. It is enabled as a podcast. You can just listen to it if you want. And also, there's a free RSS feed down in the description if you want to put that into your podcatcher. Of course, of choice. We'll be back in 2 weeks with some additional Moonrise stuff. And we'll be finishing up Act 2 in a couple episodes.
Ciao.
Wise.
So sad for buyers and moon.